gardening tips on Basingstoke Community Radio with the garden editor, Claire.
It's that time again on a Tuesday with me, Dave Chan-Smith, on Basingstoke Community Radio. This is Community Connections, and I've got Claire, the garden editor, on the line. Good morning to you, Claire.
Well, hello there, Dave. How are you?
That delay then. I thought, Houston, we had a problem.
I'm not that far away. No, lovely to be back. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Yourself?
Very well. I'm very looking forward to the fact it's May tomorrow, isn't it?
So
it's
what?
It's going to be the ninth month of May on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. God, really? Where's it gone?
I don't know, but the weather is forecast to improve steadily for this bank holiday weekend. So before we get onto the business, I'll wish everyone a very good bank holiday gardening weekend.
How many bank holidays in the UK have been good for weather, really?
Yes, not many.
Three, and you're maybe?
To somebody who got married on a bank holiday weekend.
Was the weather good?
No, but it means we get an extra day off to celebrate our wedding anniversary.
Yeah,
there we are.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right, today we're doing a Q&A session, aren't we?
We are indeed. And thank you so many people for asking so many questions. We really love it when you ask questions, so do keep them coming in.
Absolutely. Right. Do you want to go first with a couple of your questions?
Yep.
Go on then. Okay.
So the first question we have is from Jenny in King's Furlong. Jenny, thank you for your question.
Thanks, Jenny.
You ask, is it ever a good idea to plant tomatoes and peppers in the same pot? This is a great question, Jenny. The slightly annoying, obvious answer is it kind of depends how big your pot is. Both tomatoes and peppers like relatively similar conditions, which is a good start. They're both quite hungry plants and they're both tender, so they are the ones which are they're not hardy. We have to protect them from the frosts, so they do like it quite deep and quite good root systems. And they will both need quite a lot of watering. So you can grow them in the same pot. Be aware though, your tomatoes are likely to get taller than your plants. So there might be a degree of shading of your peppers when they're ripening on the vines compared to the tomatoes. So if you've got a very small pot, I would suggest going for one or the other. But if you've got a larger pot, say at least 50 by 50 or even larger, I see no reason not to try and combine them and see how you get on. Let us know how they go, Jenny.
Yeah, good question that, Jenny. I wouldn't have had a clue. I'd have just flung them in the same pot. I don't know.
Well, they're the same. They're the similar families.
Okay.
So it's also kind of working out where they come from in the world and not what kind of conditions they like.
Yeah, they're both red, aren't they?
They are indeed. Shall I pick up the next one?
Yeah, you do that. Okay.
This is a great one from Katie in Bramley.
Hello, Katie.
Hello, Katie. Thanks so much for your question. And the question is, my neighbour swears by talking to her plants. Is there any science behind that? Or is it just grandma wisdom?
See, I just want to smile when people talk to plants. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, do you remember King Charles was famous, wasn't he, for many decades for talking to his plants in a time when people thought it was quite bonkers?
Yeah, there you go.
So there is a degree of science behind this, Katie. And it's not so much the talking to plants, but there is some research about vibrations and plants, particularly those which are grown and in sheltered environments, like in a greenhouse or on your windowsill or on a balcony. And the thing is, compared to in the wild, in nature, plants grown in a protected environment are less exposed to wind. And this is good in the early days when they're establishing, but it means that they don't have an opportunity to strengthen and to actually promote stronger growth at the stem and more robust growth at the stem. So that's why vibrations sometimes can help, because it's a micro vibration and it kind of helps the little plants and seedlings experience a degree of movement, which means that they do get a bit stronger. Think of it like balancing on one leg when you brush your teeth to improve your balance. Dave asked me before we recorded, didn't we, before we came on air, whether I talk to my plants. I have been known to talk to plants, but what I will do, if I am growing on my windowsills, I do pick up my plants and I give them a bit of a shake. Or sometimes you can brush over the top to kind of simulate a bit of light wind to get them used to the movement and vibration in the air. So when you put them outside, they're not completely flummoxed.
Okay.
But talking to plants, if you want to do it, crack on and do it.
So with the vibration it's no different to like when people used to say, oh, we play music to the plants, it makes them grow because it's vibration
again,
isn't it?
I think so. So I don't know the huge amount of science on it, Katie, apart from that which we know about vibrations generally. But I imagine there's a lovely PhD for someone to do about whether it's beetles or hard rock or different forms of singing or speaking to plants which have greater effect.
Yeah, I've just got a vision of you walking around a garden talking to yourself and the neighbour thinking, she's nuts.
Sure, well, I do talk to myself.
That weird woman's out in the garden again.
I know. Why don't you just stop and go away? But, you know, a lot of people find a lot of connection with their plants, so talking to them, absolutely fine in my book, and some degree of scientific basis for that. But thank you, Katie, for your question, and I hope that helps you understand what your neighbour is up to.
Good question, Kate. Obviously, talk to your own plant. Don't go next door and start talking to the next door neighbour's plants in their front garden or something, because that'd be a bit strange, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, you've got another one there.
I have indeed. I have a question from Maureen from Hatch Warren.
Hello, Maureen.
And she, thank you for your question, Maureen. It is a really great one. I have a bunch of leftover eggshells. Can they be helpful in my garden? And if so, how? Well, eggshells are a very useful and interesting thing that quite often a lot of us have, for those of us who like eating eggs. One of the things they can be used for is to create a mulch and kind of crush them up and put them on top of pots or in kind of round particular plants. And that's because for some plants are particularly attracted to by things like slugs. And slugs do not like going over things which are particularly dry and crispy because it upsets their slime, basically.
All right.
So you can use eggshells if you've got things like hostas or lupins or things which are particularly tasty to the old slugs. It's not foolproof, I would say. Now, the slug management methods I've come across, some people put down bran flakes are really dry.
I mean, they put me off on all bran flakes. Can't stand them. Yeah, but they get. Yeah. But if you leave them out, they're going to get wet and soggy, aren't they?
That was just what I was coming to, which is great. If
sorry,
you've got
I jumped
spell.
In then. Sorry.
No, it's not at all.
You're the expert,
The other one, which might upset you a bit, Dave, but beer traps. So burying a small bowl in your border and putting a bit of leftover beer.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
See, I thought you said bear traps, not beer traps. I thought, Christ, that's a big slug, isn't it?
We're not that far on the Wild West, are we? So that's what I would prefer. I would suggest using eggshells for. You can also grind them up a bit more and use them as kind of like a grit or aeration if you're doing potting on any particular seedlings or things like that. The only thing I would say is just do be careful of introducing pathogens or any particular diseases, depending on when your eggshells come from. Some people I know bake them in the oven. So all right. To kind of get rid of any things like that, give them a wash, give them a bake, and then you can crush and use them. But give them a go, Maureen, and see if any of those suggestions work for you.
Can you put them in compost?
Well, you can, as say it won't give you much in the way of nutrition, but it will kind of do what we call it, improve aeration and drainage. So if you have things like succulents or cactus, which need really, really, they don't want to have their roots wet at all. They want it super dry. That might help a bit with aeration. And it's obviously far more sustainable than buying perlite or vermiculite, which is literally cooked in large popcorn cookers. At 800 degrees centigrade on the other side of the planet, so it's a much better use of introducing aeration.
So we can use eggshells, but use them sparingly, and just
be careful.
Yeah, and what you use them on. Okay,
and let us know how you get on, Maureen. Thank you so much for your question.
Now I've got one from Zara in Basingstoke. Mm-hmm. She just says Basingstoke. Obviously, she lives in a flat. She's got a balcony. She says, can she grow anything useful to eat? Because she lives in a flat with a balcony.
Well, balconies, to be honest, are sometimes some of the really best places to grow things.
Slugs can't get to them, can they?
Exactly. You're far more in control of the environment on a balcony. You don't have to worry about squirrels, generally speaking, or slugs or things which are crawling in. And if it's orientated to the west or south facing, so it gets a fair amount of sun, those are the kind of ideal conditions in which to grow lots and lots of herbs and interesting things to eat, like sage and thyme and oregano. So lots of things to kind of elevate your cooking. Chives in pots would do really well in those type of settings as well. So that kind of thing can work really, really well, even in the smallest of balconies. So that is one option you can have. If it's North-facing, it is a little bit more challenging to grow because north-facing tends to get less sun. But you can still grow things which otherwise have a tendency to bolt, which is a technical word of putting up a flower when you want them for the leaves.
Can I stop you there for a minute? Mm-hmm. Have you swallowed a dictionary today? Because you're using all these big words, aren't you? Like elevating your cooking and...
I think I've probably had one too many coffees.
Okay. All right. Sorry. So I had to jump in then because otherwise if I'd have said it after, it wouldn't have made much sense. Sorry. Carry on. What were you saying?
No, that's fine. So I was saying things like lettuces, chard, and Mizuna or rocket. Those are good things to grow in slightly shadier spaces because that means they're less likely to go into flowering, to put up flowers and actually give you more leaves. And that's what you actually want to eat there. So I'd say focus on Mediterranean herbs if you're south facing and focus on interesting, fun green leafy things to eat if you are more shady. And I hope those help. And happy eating and happy growing.
Good question, Zara. Well done.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Have you got some? You've still got questions, haven't you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, that's all right. That's good.
And we'll see how many we can get through. And if we can't get through
let's just do all of them. We don't worry about the adverts. We can push them back. That's fine. Don't let the program manager hear me say that.
Yeah. We'll hide.
We just push the ads back a bit. Don't worry. That's fine.
Okay. So this is a question from Jo, and Jo would like to know what to do with spreading bluebells because she has lots of them in the wrong places and she'd like to pick them up and share the love about.
All right, yeah.
So bluebells are really popular this time of year. We see lots of them in the woods around Basingstoke in Mitchell Deaver Woods, and they're really, really beautiful. There are two basic types of bluebells we see in the UK. There's the native bluebells, which have the drooping heads, and I'm not going to give you the Latin name because you'll just then accuse me of swallowing a dictionary.
No, go on, tell me what it is.
Hyacinthoides nonscripta.
Oh my God.
There you are. And then there's the hybrid, which is Hyacinthoides cross Martiniasa.
Wow.
So that one has a more vertical spike. And the ones we see in our gardens tend to be the hybrid. They tend not to be the natives. And they are very, very rigorous. So what Joe's probably got is lots of non-native bluebells, and they put out lots and lots of bulbs, and they do spread and take over areas. It's very important not to... dig up those and put them into our native woods because our native woods have the native drooping bluebells, which are protected. So they are kind of a wildlife protected flower, so we shouldn't touch those. But let's go back to the ones we find in our gardens. They are tricky to get out. If you try and dig them up when they're on flower, you probably won't get up all the bulbs. So what you need to do is to wait for them to go a little bit floppy, but not completely disappeared. Otherwise, you won't see where they are. And then dig up and around and below them by another kind of 20 to 30% of the area that you think you need to dig around. So go wider and deeper and further around than you think you really want to, which sounds like a pain, but it means you get a better chance of getting up the big bulbs and the baby tiny little bulblets, which will just be forming around it. And that is the best way of minimizing how they spread and take over the gardens. So, excuse me. So wait till they die back a bit, but you want to get them before they're really setting seed and really going into their summer dormancy, because then it's much harder to find them and dig them all up.
Sounds like a lot of hard work, that.
It is, but unless you do it, your garden literally does get taken over by them. And they've had a fantastic year this year because it's been so wet this spring. Oh, okay. So good luck, Jo. May the digging gods be with you.
Because we used to have a bluebell wood over at... do you know where over at where the range is and stuff? See, they used to, before they built all the units there, that used to be a load of woodland there, and there used to be loads and loads of bluebells in there. When I was a young lad, that's the woods we used to play in.
Yeah. And you can get the native ones. You can buy them now in the green, which is kind of like bunches of the bulbs of the old ones. So if you do want to have bluebells, but you want to make sure you're kind of getting the non-invasive ones.
Go around to Joe's house and dig hers up then. Couldn't you?
Absolutely. Share the love. But, you know, they're great in a container, because if you put something in a container, it's not going to run rampant. It can only go far as the edges of your container. But thank you for your question, Joe.
Good question,
that.
Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll finish off. We've got two more, but we'll do one sub question very quickly, which is a question about bulbs and what to do about your daffodils and tulips once they've gone over. And this question comes from Louise. So thank you, Louise, for your question. And Louise is asking, when should I cut expectant daffodils and how should they be cut? I see some are tied up at the base, but I'm not sure if I should cut them down. So general rule with all bulbs is, although they might have flowered already, the bulb is like a battery and you've used the charge this year by making it flower. And what the leaves are now doing is collecting the energy to recharge that battery for next year. So all the green leaves, while the leaves are still green, they are still photosynthesizing and getting energy.
Here we go again.
Pushing back into the bulb for next year. Go on, you say photosynthesizing.
No, I can't. No, I can't do that. No. I'm running my teeth in for Shergar today.
Yeah, I really shouldn't have had that second coffee, should I? Anyway, so what we like to do with bulbs is that you wait, therefore, until the leaves have died and have gone brown. Now, that can look quite tatty, particularly if you've got a small space and you've got nothing else to kind of hide all your daffodils behind. So you can tie up the leaves, but remember, the more you tie them up, there's less amount of green leaf there is to photosynthesize and get that bulb bigger for next year.
I just keep laughing when you say that now.
I know, I've lost it. I really have.
Yeah.
If
been
that's
a long
too
day.
Much faff for you, if that has too much of a faff for you, you can also apply a feed. Like if you feed them with a liquid fertilizer, something like a nettle feed, that will actually speed up getting the energy back into the bulbs. And that's quite a good idea to do with tulips if you want your tulips to repeat and carry on for many years. So you can feed them and that means you don't have to leave the leaves quite as long. But I would hold off if you can. And if you don't, if you just want to leave them for the moment and they will do their own thing. Nature will take care of them. If you can't wait, give them a bit of a feed and recharge that battery ready for next year.
Oh, that work. I'm out of breath just thinking about that.
It's a good job there's bank holiday weekend coming up. That's
yeah.
all I'm saying.
Oh, no. God. Yeah. Right, okay. Go on. You're one more question, yeah. Go on, we've got enough time. Yeah, squeeze it in.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
One
yet.
More question. Yeah. Okay, Helen asked a question about what should I do with a blossom on one of my apple cordon trees, which is covered in aphids and greenfly, to the extent that the whole lot of the blossom is dying and dropping off. I tried to introduce a ladybird, but I think she must have got overwhelmed. So, Helen, thank you for your question. This is a great one about a common thing we see at this time of spring, which is lots of aphids, which are like kind of greenfly or blackfly.
All right.
And particularly we see them on apple trees and they have kind of this sooty residue and that can inhibit fruit formation and can make the leaves curl and it can cause stunted growth. First thing to say is aphids are utterly normal and they are a normal, healthy part of the garden. So a degree of aphids being present in your garden is not a problem at all. Ants love them. The ants actually harvest them for their young. They're a great source of food for ladybirds, for hoverflies, for predatory wasps. So it's providing a lot of food. However, poor Helen's got a problem, hasn't she? Because at the moment her apple tree is so overwhelmed the blossom might be dying off. So what can Helen do? So she's tried to introduce a ladybird, but the thing is that ladybirds quite often are a bit more active, a bit after all the aphids have kind of built up a large population. So I don't really advise chemicals, but what you can do is you can try fairy liquid diluted in water and use that very gently to spray off or to use your fingers and thumb, if you're not too squeamish, and just squish them off the affected parts of your apple tree. And that will basically break down the fat walls of the aphids and basically cause them to die. You do want to be careful even using fairy liquids when you're looking around other pollinators because you could obviously, you know, cause damage to them as well. But the alternative is tolerating it. And it might be that you want to try and actually make sure you've got apples on your apple trees, which is wholly understandable. So I would say combination of using your fingers and thumbs and taking stuff off very gently, using some fairy liquid. And then if you want to kind of boost your tree's resistance to any aphid attack, you can look at plant invigorators, which actually help boost the health and the ability of the tree to cope with any aphid attack. Something like SB plant invigorator is a good one for that type of thing. So no particular quick fixes, Helen, but I hope those three ideas give you a bit of a steer on what to do. And again, as everyone who's asked questions, please let us know how you get on. We love to hear from you and it makes our lives much more interesting and fun because Dave gets to laugh at me while I try and pronounce big words and get them wrong.
I was going to ask you a question of that. Has it got to be fairy liquid or can it be any?
Any.
That's
any,
all right. Okay.
Yes, yeah. Sorry, other other washing up
liquid, yeah,
are
that's
available.
Right, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed.
Yeah,
yeah. Something
right.
basically to cut through the fat, as if it's a fatty dish that you're trying to, to cut through.
All right.
So it's exactly the same principle.
Oh, okay. Well, I've learned something today.
Yeah.
I've learned I can grow tomatoes and peppers in the same pot.
Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do with your eggshells?
Well, I ain't going to bake them. I might just crush them up and put them on my pot to stop my slugs going near them. Yeah,
great.
So yeah, that's all right.
Yeah,
that's right. I ain't got a balcony, so I'm not going to do that bit.
No, and it's also green things, which I'm not sure that you're a fan of eating lettuce, but
I don't mind lettuce. That's all right. That was a good Q&A session there. That was all right.
It was. Thank you, everyone. We've got some more questions coming in, I can see, about the Chelsea Chop, which we can cover next time when it will nearly be the Chelsea Flower Show. So thank you for the bunch of fantastic questions. Do keep them coming in. It makes our job so much fun answering them all, and I hope everyone has a good gardening weekend.
Yeah, it brightens up our Tuesday morning, doesn't it?
Indeed it does.
Right, okay, now well, as per usual, what's your song for this week, Claire?
Well, my song for this week is, I thought about something about questions, but I couldn't find anything good, so I found a song that I really love which has a question in it in the lyrics, and my song for this week is Killers, Are We Human?
Okay, thank you very much. We'll play that after the ads, and thank you very much for joining me today. We'll see you in a couple of weeks time, won't we?
You're so welcome indeed. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks very much. See you later, Claire. Bye.
See ya. Bye.
Gardening tips on Basingstoke Community Radio.